Senate will come to order. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, January 25th, 2011. Message number 140. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 80, Service of Process in Family Violence and Stalking Cases. Ayes 58, excused 2. From the House of Representatives, January the 25th, 2011. Third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 27, School Year Required Contract Days. Ayes 40, noes 18, excused 2. House Bill 68, Violent Felony Redefinition Expansion. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House Bill 69, Prescription for Marijuana Invalid. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House Bill 101, Vicious Animals, Interference with Game Wardens. Ayes 38, noes 20, excused 2. House Bill 105, Temporary Military Duty, Child Custody and Visitation. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 79, Establishment of Private Roads. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill 112, Mining Permits. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. From the House of Representatives, message number 143, third reading failed, January the 25th, 2011. Mr. President, the bill listed below failed to pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 31, Paramutual Regulation. Ayes 29, noes 29, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 132, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 132, Strangulation of a Household Member and Act Relating to Crimes and Offenses, sponsored by Senator Hastert.
Senate File 132 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 135, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 135, University of Wyoming Federal Mineral Royalties, an act relating to public funds, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
House Bill 135 has been referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. House Bill 130, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 130, Teacher Certification 2, an act relating to education. Sponsored by Senator Hicks.
House Bill 130 has been assigned to Committee Number 4. Senate File 130 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 136, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 136, Water, Source of Supply, an Act Relating to Water Rights. Sponsored by Senator Meyer.
Senate File 136 has been assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 133, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 133, Medicaid Diversion Program, an act relating to the Medicaid program, sponsored by Senator Scott.
Senate File 133 has been referred to Committee 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 25, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flateren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 57, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flateren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 24th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 59, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flateren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriation, to whom was referred Senate File 110, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholson, Peterson, and Von Flateren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 79, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel. No, Senator Dockstetter, Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 83, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstetter, Driscoll, and Escobel, Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 1, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstetter, Driscoll. No, Senator Escobel. Senator Burns, Chairman. January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 44, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, and Johnson. No, Senator Scott. Excuse, Senator Martin. Senator Johnson, Acting Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion has carried. Senator Schiffer.
Committee of the Whole, will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 33. Will the reading clerk please read in the bill?
Senate File 33, State Parks Acquisition of Lands, and Act Relating to State Parks and Cultural Resources, sponsored by the Travel Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Driscoll, and Escobel. No, Senator Dockstader, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 33, State Parks Acquisition of Lands. And, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I believe there was a second referral to committee number 2 that wasn't read in by the clerk.
Oh. You are correct. Senator Burns, let me interrupt you, and we'll read in the fine action of that fine committee.
No. Oh, okay.
It was referred to committee number 2 appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I compliment the reading clerk on catching it before I even said anything. Mr. Chairman, I've already moved the bill. There are no standing committee amendments from either committee. Mr. Chairman, what this bill is about is state parks. What the bill does is it authorizes state parks to accept 2 parcels of property. And for members on the floor, if you look at the handouts you've gotten, you see a very colorful map up on your desk. The first one deals with the first property, which is up in by Guernsey State Park, which I believe is Platte County. And it consists of 40 acres of land that is being transferred from the military department to state parks. There is no cost on this land. There is no increase or decrease of land in state hands. It's just going from one department to the other at no cost. Mr. Chairman, this particular piece of property has some fairly recent historical significance. During the CCC days, during the Depression in the 30s, the Civilian Conservation Corps actually built a golf course in there. It was one of the original old prairie golf courses with the sand greens. Some of the holes are already on current state land, parkland. This adds 2 more of the holes onto it. The state park has no plans at this point to redevelop that golf course or do anything with it. The only expense involved in that might be sometime in the near future they might go ahead and fence it in, because right now it's fenced out. Mr. Chairman, the other piece of property in this bill is considerably larger. It's over by Kirk Gowdy State Park, which I believe is in Laramie County, and involves 157 acres of land. And if you look on the second page of your attachment, you can see the importance of this land, Mr. Chairman. You can see how it tucks into the corner of Kirk Gowdy State Park. Kirk Gowdy State Park currently is an L shape, and it fits right into where that L is. And, Mr. Chairman, it consists of 157 acres of land, and it's all the land to the west of the entry road going into Kirk Gowdy State Park down to Granite Springs Reservoir, which is the most popular part of the park. Mr. Chairman, Kirk Gowdy State Park is one of the busiest state parks we have in the state. It's the closest to the Colorado border, and it is heavily slammed every year. 8 weekends this past summer, they were completely sold out and couldn't let anybody else in. Mr. Chairman, this land will serve 2 functions. One is there is a nice valley in there that's sheltered from the wind, and State Parks estimates that they can put an additional 75 campsites in there, very nice wooded campsites, which will help relieve some of the congestion there. The other thing that it'll do is that purpose it'll serve is that is where they plan to put the park headquarters along with the fee gate, and along with bathrooms and showers. And, Mr. Chairman, this is going to be of minimal expense to the state because there is a gentleman who was a friend of Kirk Gowdy's who is already donated $900,000 to the state in order to build this building in honor of Kurt Gowdy. Mr. Chairman, the property itself is estimated to be worth $595,600, and that is based on the development of the cost of the developed land on all sides of Kurt Gowdy State Park. It's a highly developed area, and so I think it's to our advantage to go ahead and get hold of this. Any money that is not spent on that purchase will revert to the budget reserve account. Actually, I think it'll revert back to the general fund. And, Mr. Chairman, the money that is paid will be paid to the state lands to the state board of land commissioners. That's who they're buying the land from. So again, the state's not gaining any land, it's not losing any land, it's just transferring between departments. And the money, once it's paid to the state land board of land commissioners, will go into the Common School Permanent Land Fund. So, Mr. Chairman, if there are any further questions, I'd be glad to take them at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, and I was trying to recall, was there not a bill to provide matching funds to allow that gentleman to put his money in to get that for that park, or is that something that was discussed and never did go through?
Senator Burns.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I'm working off the top of my head. I believe there was a bill, and I believe it did go through, and I believe that money's already been appropriated.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, if we develop those 75 campsites that you were talking about on this land, and I understand that's only one of the purposes of the land, and we rent them out in the summertime and the normal rate to tourists from Colorado, are we going to make an operating profit on that?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, none of the state parks operate at an operating profit, although it will reduce the deficit somewhat, and it will not just be Colorado tourists who will be renting it. There will be Wyoming tourists as well as Colorado and many other states. They're all welcome.
Further questions? Are you ready for the question?
I got you.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick explanation of my no vote on committee that ties in with our last comment. That's why I voted no, just simply because we're expanding something that continues to cost a lot of money, and we can't get ahead with it. That was my reason for no.
Further questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so with a favorable report on Senate File 33, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
Senate File 33 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 37. Would the reading clerk please read in the bill?
Senate File 37, Health Insurance Definitions, an Act Relating to Insurance, sponsored by Senator Emmerich. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 37 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File 37, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 6.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, when we got into this bill, we discovered a bit of a mess in the insurance code. The definitions are not very up-to-date and kind of complicated. And we had difficulty, the proponents and the insurance department had several sessions trying to figure out exactly how to handle this so that we didn't have unintended consequences. And this amendment is a product of this. In explaining the amendment, I've got to explain that the part of the purpose for the bill is that there are quite a number of references to health insurance, which we call disability insurance, in the national reform that passed. And if we didn't make some separation in our definitions, we were likely to tag some of the specialized versions of insurance with some pretty onerous requirements stemming out of that bill. So that's the purpose of this. It turns out that things are so convoluted that if we just change the definitions, then we'd have some pretty bad unintended consequences and exempt some of those things from some regulation that they really need. And so the temporary compromise, because we need to do something, was to say the things that are already, for the things that are already law and will get passed this session, we'll continue to use the old definition, but we'll use the new one going forward. And then we charge the insurance department to go look into the definitions and come back with a more permanent solution, really aimed at the next general session. Ask them to report to the Committee 7 and Committee 10. Those are the two committees with possible substantive jurisdiction. Mr. Chairman, the Management Council will have a decision to make as to which is going to be charged, and the date is carefully set to be after the reapportionment duties of Committee 7 are over. So that's the basics of the Standing Committee amendment. I don't know, the sponsor of the bill may want to add some explanation to that. If so, I'll yield to Senator Emmerich.
Senator Emmerich.
I think we may enter into an Orwellian doublespeak with insurance here. I'll try to simplify it. I'd like to, if I may, go through the amendment as presented, the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, page 2, line 13. The language inserted here is included at the request of the Medicaid Division to clearly state that reimbursement recovery program of Medicaid shall not be impacted by this bill. And I might also add that there are 18 other states that have legislation similar to this and are still able to obtain Medicaid reimbursement. Page 2, line 17, page 2, 19, page 4, 11, page 4, line 14. The language inserted here is to make clear that the definitions provided in Senate File 37 apply only prospectively to legislation using these definitions with an effective date of July 2nd, 2001, so as to not confuse with other legislation. Therefore, the definitions as used in the current statutes and other statutes enacted during this legislation will not be affected. On page 4, after line 14, is inserted section 3. The purpose of the Section 3 is to ensure that the use of the terms health insurance and disability insurance together with other insurance product terms are carefully reviewed by the insurance department. That review will be reported to both the joint corporations, elections, political subdivisions, and other committees, as has been mentioned by Senator from Natrona County. Now, Senate File 37 is really not as complicated as it would appear on the surface. It's intended to remove confusion. It is intended to remove double coverage that is not the individuals do not need to pay for. It addresses a lot of discrepancies that make the distinction between comprehensive or major medical insurance and other types of health insurance products. What this essentially does ensures that Wyomingites do not pay for unwanted or inappropriate insurance coverage. And I might add that in the committee, we only had discussions of language and terms. There was none that stood against this, and I would appreciate your passage of this. I will stand for any questions.
Question for Spock. The question having been called for, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that Standing Committee Amendment number 1 for Senate File 37 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Standing Committee number 1 for Senate File 37 has passed. We are back on the bill. Any discussion on the bill? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would just say two things. I think the bill is necessary so that there aren't unfortunate consequences from the national reform on some of the types of insurance here. And second, and I asked the Management Council to pay particular attention, we got a mess in our insurance code. It is in need, in my judgment, of a general statutory revision, and that's what we uncovered as we got into this bill. I think you're seeing two things. One is some hangover from the pre-LSO days, when, frankly, the bill drafting around here was not very good. And second, some hangover from the days when the NAIC, when working model bills, and a good part of the insurance code is NAIC model bills, they used to pay their attorneys by the pound. And it showed in the drafting. We weren't able to get all of that out and enacting it here. And the combination is such that we need to rework our insurance code so it's much more understandable and the definitions made more sense. We aren't proposing that in this bill. That's beyond this bill. But I would call the Management Council's attention to that as a piece of unfinished business that sooner or later ought to be dealt with.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that Senate file, that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, that they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 37, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 37 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 68. Would the reading clerk please read the file?
Senate File 68, Summary Probate Amendments and Act Relating to Probate, sponsored by Senator Ross. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
We do have a standing committee amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 68, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 11.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee whole rise and report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 68, summary probate amendments. And we have, for an explanation of the amendment and the bill, we'll turn, if you'd call on the good majority floor leader, I think he'll take it from here.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we might simply address the Standing Committee Amendment at this time. The Standing Committee Amendment simply clears up a typo that would change the word probation to probate. This is a probate statute. For some reason, We brought in the criminal code. So I'd urge your favorable consideration of deleting probation and insert probate.
Senator Ross, did you move the... Senator Ross, I think you need to move that.
I thought the good chairman had moved it. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 68 and ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you. The question is on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 68. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Senate File 68 has passed. We are back on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Support from the peanut gallery. Go ahead.
I hope I get a little bit more respect as I just discuss this bill. This is a good little bill. Lord help me. Okay, I'm going to gather myself here. I bring you this bill because it's something that's really become very evident to me in my law practice and others with regard to our summary probate statutes, and there's two of them. One is 2-1-201, which basically deals with personal property, and the other is 2-1-205, which is summary procedure for distribution of real estate. What these two statutes do is simply try to provide a short way to transfer property for that kind of property that doesn't have a vehicle to get to their heirs already. And right now, the current statute is at $150,000. This bill would take those limits up to $200,000. What I'm seeing in my practice, and of course I don't hold myself out as an estate practitioner, but I do have clients that come in, and generally they're small estates or small little things, where the sole asset they may have is a bank account, or they may have an insurance policy or something, but they did fail to designate a beneficiary. But most importantly, they have a home. And the home is generally worth $150,000 or more. And so with the current state of the law, what you end up having to do is probate that whole estate. And it's expense to the families. It's an expense to even get an attorney. Our attorney's fees in probate are set by statute and beginning at 2% of the value of the estate. And so, quite frankly, it's not cost effective. And as the assessed valuations have gone up in this state, homes are generally at least $150,000. So what this bill does is try to take a modest step of increasing those amounts in 2-1-201 and 2-1-205 up to $200,000 in hopes that we can handle and transfer those properties more expeditiously. There is a change on page 2, lines 10 and 11 and 12 that I should point out to you. One of the things that you see in dealing with probate is that you could have a decedent from another state, and that decedent has assets in that state. But he also has maybe a cabin or something in Wyoming. And the way the current statute is written, because that he may have $2 million in Arizona, an estate, but he's got a cabin here that's worth $125,000, courts are distinguishing and saying, well, the whole value of the estate is greater than $150,000, and therefore you have to probate this piece of property in Wyoming. So what this language says is, in Wyoming or otherwise subject to probate administration in this state. So we're just talking about what we're doing here in this state. I think this is well needed at this time. There's been no testimony adverse to this. It is important, I think, to administration at a time when most families, you know, are going through a rough time when somebody dies and don't know what to do and ultimately come to a lawyer, and then we say, sorry, you got to probate your whole estate here, and it costs you a whole lot of money. So I think this is well, its time is due now, and, you know, if anything, perhaps the $200,000 limit is a little low, but, you know, I figured that it was a modest step, and it was, and so with that, I would stand for any questions, but I think it's an important piece of legislation.
Senator Bebop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my question, is how long has it been at 150, and should it be a little bit higher to be more reasonable?
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the statutes in front of me, but the last I looked, I think it was in the 70s that we last 10 years. It's been a while since we've looked at this, the testimony of a number of practitioners came in support of the bill and said it's been quite a while. So I think we could look at the statute. You can see the last time that it was amended, but it's been a few years.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. First, is my understanding correct that if this passes, states that are below the 200,000 will not have to go through a probate. We'll go through the simple administrative. There isn't a simpler step even lower than that is. Okay. The other question I have is the value of the home that might be involved in this, is that a total market value or is it the net value after the value of the mortgage is subtracted off?
Senator Ross.
Good question. And it's my understanding that it's the net value if there is a mortgage that's due against it. But for most of these that you see, they've owned their house for 30-some years and they don't have a mortgage on it, and all they're trying to do is pass it. So and if it passes, it would be subject to the mortgage. The creditors are get notice, the whole nine yards in this thing, so they still get notice under the distribution for real property. So I think that answers the question.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this really is a good little bill.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my understanding is correct, and we can set this at this number without any interference from the federal laws on the state?
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely correct. There are no estate tax implications in this. Of course, the estate tax at this point in time with federal government extending the Bush tax credits, it's into the millions of dollars. Now, I'm not even sure, $5 million. So, and in terms of an inheritance tax in the state of Wyoming, there isn't one unless your estate kicks in, if there's an estate tax that would be due, which means you have an enormous estate.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just checked. I think it was done in 2002. It was like when this. I think it raised rates from 70 to 150 in 2002.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 68, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senate File 68 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 88. Would the reading clerk please read in the file?
Senate File 88, Expungement of Nonviolent Felonies, an Act Relating to Crime and Punishment, sponsored by Senator Burns. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Escobel, and Hicks. No, Senator Christensen and Perkins. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
We do have an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 88, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 88, Expungement of Nonviolent Felonies. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been read in, and I would move Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 88 at this time. And for an explanation of the bill and the amendment, I would ask that you call on the good chairman of TRW, Senator Burns.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 88 calls for a policy decision on the part of this body. And it comes. Let me tell you where the idea came from. That I had. Well, first of all, let me tell you what it does. It basically states that after 10 years after a convicted felon who has been convicted of a nonviolent felony, 10 years after they've finished their sentence or probation or parole, whatever it is, they can apply to the court, or actually to the prosecuting attorney where they were convicted, and ask to have their felony expunged. This can happen any time after the 10 years. And, Mr. Chairman, where I got the idea was some years back, I was visiting a court, and there was a young lady who was up. She was 21 years old, single mother of three, living with her mother in a trailer court. And she had bounced $550, three checks, totaling more than $550, and she was up on a felony charge for it. Now, we have since moved that threshold up to $1,000, but I've been thinking about her. If she walked in here now, I wouldn't know her, but I've been thinking about that ever since, and I was thinking, what happens to this girl in 18 years? Her kids are grown and gone. She's done everything she can to pull herself up by the bootstraps. She's gone back to school. She's gotten degrees, and she's gotten jobs. She's gotten skills and so forth. But she has that felony hanging over her, and she will have it there for the rest of her life. She cannot get a gun. She cannot vote. She cannot be bonded. And there's any number of other opportunities in life that she cannot do because this nonviolent felony happened earlier in her life. And, Mr. Chairman, I submit that there are probably, I don't know how many, but I'm guessing there may be hundreds of people in the state that are in that same situation. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a definition for a violent felony, and there's a definition for a nonviolent felony. And this is just simply for the nonviolent felons. Now, Wyoming's one of only 10 states that does not extend the vote back to convicted felons. But this is a little different than that. This actually allows their felony to be expunged. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to go through the bill so we can see what the steps that one of these people might have to take. Mr. Chairman, if you go to page 3 on line 5, it's where it states that at least 10 years have passed since the completion of any periods of probation or any program ordered by the court, including jail. In paragraph number 2, it states that they have not previously pleaded guilty or nolo contendere to any other felony. This is a one-time deal. But it states here later, it could be multiple felonies if it was from the same event. And we've seen situations where there'll be basically one act, but a prosecuting attorney will charge two or three different felonies off that. Mr. Chairman, in paragraph number three, starting on line 15, it states that this cannot happen if there's a firearm involved in the felony. If there's a firearm, forget it. You're not up for this program. In paragraph B, subsection B, starting on line 19, Mr. Chairman, this is where the process actually starts, and the prosecuting attorney, the district attorney or the county attorney, can go to the Department of Criminal Division of Criminal Investigation, the DCI, to see about getting a history, criminal history of that person. They pay $100. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment that raises that to $300. Going on to page 3, the top of page 3, the prosecuting attorney shall serve notice of the petition to any victim or victims of this nonviolent felony so that they know that the petitioner is asking for this. And, Mr. Chairman, that portion to me is very important. It'll include a copy of the petition and the statutes applicable, because there are situations where you've got somebody, it's a nonviolent felony, but it's a white-collar crime. And in some of these people, I'm not saying that they're all good, innocent little felons themselves. There are cases where people have robbed people of their life savings, and they've done it nonviolently. But the victim is still there, and the victims are still suffering from that. And that's not what those are not the people that this bill is aimed at. That's why those victims are notified, so that if they do not think this person is deserving of having the felony expunged, they can let the prosecuting attorney know. They can let the court know. Mr. Chairman, if there are no victims or the victims can't be notified, the attorney on lines 13 and 14 shall have deemed to have complied with the provisions of the subsection. On line 16, subsection D, the court, at its discretion, will ask for a written report from DCI with the criminal history. I was wrong in my explanation of that earlier. If the prosecuting attorney, by prosecuting attorney, that's not necessarily the same individual, because that person may have retired or been elected out of office. It's considered to be the same prosecuting attorney's, the same office. If they do not think this person's deserving of it, they can object to the court, and that's the subsection E. And that's where he can file his objection with the court, but he has to do so within 30 days. And it has to be a written objection. Then there's a provision in there, going to page 4, where if the petitioner objects to a criminal history being done, there's a standard in there that allows for the court to hold a hearing on that. Although I'm kind of curious as to why they would object to it, but we do allow them that. And that also at the bottom of that paragraph, it also allows that any person who has any relevant information toward this, maybe somebody who is not a victim but knows about the case or knows about the person, that's the time at which they could testify at that hearing. If the objection is not filed, the court may summarily order that the petitioner is otherwise eligible for relief. No order granting expungement shall be issued prior to the expiration of the 30 days. So everybody make sure that they have enough time to get any objections and so forth in. If the court does grant the expungement, the court files shall be placed under seal, and the court shall transmit a certified copy of the order to the Division of Criminal Investigation. Even if the court does allow the expungement, the prosecuting attorney can still appeal it. If he really thinks that the court made a mistake in here, he still has the right to appeal. On page 5, subsection J, this allows the prosecuting attorney and his employees to be immune from any liability by any agency or any individual. And, Mr. Chairman, that's based on going two directions. One is so that the petitioner cannot sue the prosecuting attorney for opposing the exoneration or the expungement, rather. And also, if it turns out that the, let's say the prosecuting attorney didn't object and the person gets their record expunged, gets let's say, their rights to gun back, and then commits a crime, the victim of that crime cannot go back and sue the prosecuting attorney for not having objected to the expungement in the first place. There is nothing in this section that shall be construed to allow a person who has previously received an expungement to get another one. You get one bite at the apple. That's it. Mr. Chairman, when you go to page 6, all that are the definitions under law and the effective date. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go to the Standing Committee Amendment at this point. And the first portion of it just goes to the title. And then when you go down to line 8, that's where the fee is increased from $100 to $300. And then on page 6 on line 2, there's a new paragraph put in there which points out, it's inferred throughout the bill, but it's not pointed out until the amendment that you actually get your rights restored under the expungement. And, Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee amendment at this point.
Senator Burns, it has already been moved.
Oh, well then, Mr. Chairman, I would be glad to take questions on the Standing Committee amendment.
Questions on the Standing Committee amendment. Questions? Are you ready for the questions? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. Why did the committee take it from 100 to 300? I'd like some justification for that.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the County Attorneys Association does not like this bill. And the district attorney from Laramie County showed up to express his dislike for the bill. And when asked why he didn't like it, he said that it caused too much paperwork and would cause would cost money to his office and to the counties. And so to partially offset that concern, that's why the fee was raised from 100 to 300. It could be raised more. Frankly, we did have testimony from a convicted felon from 20-some years ago, and I think a lot of people would be willing to pay even more than that to get a felony off their record.
Senator Burns, did you say that the district attorney from Laramie County showed up saying it would cost the county money? Did you mean to say that, I guess?
Mr. Chairman, that's what he said. I don't know if that's what he meant to say, but...
I think I'm tracking with you, Mr. Senator Burns. Question on the amendment, regardless of what he said. The question is, on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 88, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment number 1, the Senate File 88, has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like some clarification on page 2, line 8, as to what any program ordered by the court, whether that would include restitution to the victims.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, it might well. Keep in mind that the petitioner is petitioning back to the original court that convicted him. So it's up to that court to figure out if restitution is that program or not. I think by program, I think what the language that was used by LSO, I'm guessing it had more to do with probably a rehab program of some sort The idea of restitution actually makes sense to me. And we're talking 10 years after this, so if they haven't paid the restitution yet, I'd say this might give them good incentive to do it.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a good little bill, but I do have a couple of questions for the senator. I'm just curious about some clarification regarding second offense possibilities. If, for example, somebody embezzled 10 years later, they get that expunged, and then they embezzle again. What's the legal standing of that situation? I'm assuming, based on this legislation, that is now not a repeat offense, but I'm seeking clarification there. My other curiosity is with regard to what it takes to get this unsealed. You said that it would be sealed for the record. What conditions would allow the record to be unsealed, Mr. Chairman? And I'll stop there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, it could only be unsealed by order of the court. And, Mr. Chairman, one thing I forgot to mention, and it was in the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'm sorry I didn't mention this. This does not apply to anybody convicted of sexual assault or any of the sexual assault statutes. I just want to make that clear. The question did arise about the idea of how often they could apply for this. And if you can only be expunged once, the question arose about whether you could apply for expungement and not get it, how soon you could apply again, there was discussion about just making it, just giving one bite at the apple. You get the one shot, and if you don't get it, that's it. That's to keep people from applying year after year. And, Mr. Chairman, I don't know that the committee took any action on that. And, frankly, it was something I had not considered when having the bill drawn up.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the sponsor, after you go all through all the court hearings and everything and you get the expungement and it's sealed, and then this person has to step back out into the real world, I believe that on a lot of credit checks that this would appear that there was a felony. How does this person go about now saying, my felony disappeared, so would you take it off? Was there any discussion or thought on that?
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, that person's already been out in the real world for at least the last 10 years. There was no discussion over the idea of credit ratings or anything along those lines. That is a good question. And frankly, for somebody who's been convicted of a felony, if you get it expunged, I'd say it's a pleasant problem to have. But there may be ways to get that expunged. I don't know, to tell you the truth. I'm not up on credit rating, how the credit rating mechanisms would work, and how you can get things taken off.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I too would feel that this is a good bill, but I have a question. One of the things I've heard it several times in committee meetings is the director of the Department of Corrections saying that as when his inmates come out and get released, they have trouble finding work because we have barred, and other people have barred, so many occupations to anybody that's been convicted of a felony. Now, this won't help his immediate graduates because the 10 years will not have passed. But it will help generally with people as they go forward, I think. And I'm trying to figure out how much. The question I have is, as I understand, if it's been expunged, then if there's a criminal background check, it won't show up on that. But a lot of things, the employment application or the application for a license will say, have you ever been convicted of a felony? How should somebody who has been convicted but had it expunged answer that question? Because if they answer yes, then they're likely to continue to be barred from that occupation. If they answer no, you do a background check and they won't be disproved, but it still might come out. How How should they handle that? And what I'm thinking is, should we put some specific instructions in here instructing the individual how they should answer that particular question?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I suspect it might be handled the same way youthful offender convictions are, and I'm trying to remember the term for it happens with adults where the conviction goes away after a certain amount of time. And at that time, the judge instructs the defendant that if you are asked if you've ever been convicted, you are to answer no. And that's what the judge tells them at the time. If we want to put language like that in here, I don't think it's necessary. I think the judges know that stuff better than we do.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we would be wise to put that kind of language in here, because I think the judges may need some specific statutory authority to issue that instruction. I think it's good instruction to issue, but I think there may need to be some specific statutory authority to inform both the judges and the person involved how to handle that particular circumstance.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would consider that to be a friendly amendment.
Senator Bernard.
Mr. Chairman, I have a concern here. It says on page 2, line 1, the convicting court. Is that a court, the exact court that he was convicted in, or does that just mean any court? So if I had did the felony in Evanston, Wyoming, I'd have to go back to Evanston, Wyoming to have this done. Okay. And then I thought about the good senator's reference to somebody that cashed a check for $500. Well, what happens if somebody cashed a check or bilked somebody out of $5 million? You know, is there any limit on the amount of money? It's the same principle, but one's five million. I would have no problem with somebody with $500, but $5 million, that's a lot of money. And then I also had a question about what happens if somebody from another state who has this felony record comes into our state. Can they do this, or they're automatically excluded because they didn't get convicted in the state?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the last question first, because I didn't write it down. Anybody who's convicted, who has been convicted of a felony in another state would not be eligible under this program. The answer to the first question, you have to go back to the original court. If you are convicted in Evanston, you have to go back to Evanston, and you have to be expunged in Evanston in that court. And, Mr. Chairman, as to the $5 million versus the $500, yes. If somebody built a number of people out of $5 million in Evanston, he theoretically could get that exonerated. But if he built out of $5 million in Evanston and 10 years later he came back asking to have expunged, I have a feeling there would be some victims and people around there who might remember him and might want to show up at that expungement hearing, as opposed to the young lady who got a felony for $550.
Senator Escobar.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I would encourage the body to vote in favor of this bill. I think when we talked about this bill, we were talking about some of those felonies that come about because of youthful discretions or because of some of those situations where, because of the way the law is written, a person is ends up with a felony. For example, I would suspect that if anybody in this body has played poker, and within that group there's one individual that they're not familiar with, it's not a bona fide social relationship, therefore they might very well qualify for a felony, because that's, at least there's some argument there. And I think, because of some of these youthful discretions, sometimes a person unavoidably, because of youthful stupidity or whatever, end up with a felony. And I think we can all agree that there, but for the grace of God, this could very well apply to some of us. I know it could apply to me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, in regards to the person that bilked someone out of a large amount of money, I think if we make it clear on second reading that restitution is required, that it be paid back, then those people that were bilked out of that money would be restored back as ordered by the court. And so I think that it's important that we make sure that restitution is part of the program that we're thinking about, because although I think there is a good chance that people would remember that person, if they haven't restored the victims to their and made them whole, then that's something that certainly shouldn't be an area where we should allow these people their full rights.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I would consider that to be an extremely helpful amendment to the bill.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question, or maybe something that maybe the bringer of this bill may want to kind of take a look at it for the next time around, maybe, or whatever. But on page 2, line 24, last one, we were in a discussion a little while back here about the change in the amount of money. It went from $100 to $300 on the amendment, so on and so forth. And I don't want to talk about that, but I just want to talk about this statute, 59144. If we look at that, that means this money is really being deposited by the state treasurer into an indigent service account. I'm not sure whether the local law enforcement or local courts or local prosecutors could, how they would get the money out of there or whether they could, but that may be something you may want to, the bringer of this bill may want to take a look at. And I'm not familiar on how they do that. But it is an indigent, it's called indigent civil legal service account established by the state treasurer.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, the discussion we had up in the committee was interesting, and there were a lot of different points came across, and what was clear was that there was a real sense of compassion and need on how to address this. And we went around and talked about it in the committee. But one of the things that came up when the district attorney talked with us and gave his association's recommendation that they were opposed to it, when we pushed into it a little bit farther, what he was referring to, or one of the things he was referring to, was the cost. And the sheer numbers that they anticipated in each office that would come forward with this, and that $100 or $300, you know, how did that really address the concerns? He spoke just in his office of needing another employee and victim witness just to reach out and contact the families and see what their responses were. They were anticipating that kind of a response. This was a great opportunity, but with that great opportunity, they anticipated a large number of people applying for this. When we talked about the dollars and the impact, there was conversation about making it a one-time thing, one bite at the apple. There was also conversation about how do we get to those true costs, because someone's going to have to pay for that, whether it's in another attorney or staff time. I know, for example, in that great county to the far west, okay, Teton County, that when we got into trimming budgets 25% in 2 years, it got, for our prosecutor's office, he came in and laid out and he said, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do. And to add more duties like this, another big job that especially in the initial phases could be a bit of a landslide, how would we pay for that, and how could he pay for that? My concern in those conversations was, is dealing with folks who have convictions based on this bill going to impact the justice to the people who are now either victims or accused
in current cases. And so I think this impact of the true cost and how it's going to be met, whether it's from the state, whether it's local taxes, but we wouldn't want that unintended consequence of justice delayed for today's either victims or accused individuals. And so that real cost issue is probably the biggest hurdle I see on this one.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 88, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senate File 88 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for Senate File for our consideration is Senate File 100.
Senate File 100, Cruelty to Animals, an act relating to cruelty to animals, sponsored by Senator Geis. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Peterson, Von Flatron. No, Senator Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
We do have two standing committee amendments. I would ask the reading clerk to read in standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 100.
Senate File 100, standing committee amendment number 1, page 2, line 12.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 100 do pass, and I'd also like to have the standing committee read in. Was it read in?
Senator Geis, standing committee amendment number one was read in.
Huh?
It was read in.
Okay. I move that standing committee amendment number 1. What this is a companion bill to Senate File 10. We took care of all the large animals in it, and this is the little animals, small ones. If you read the Wyoming Constitution, Wyoming is liable for all dumb animals, and that might even include me. I don't know, but that's okay. So we passed Senate File 10 out of here, and what we're taking care of now is your cats and dogs and guinea pigs and parakeets and you name it. I mean, when you really look at what the Constitution says, Wyoming's liable for everything. So what we did is separated this out, and we're on down on page 1, line 15, Wyoming, 6-3203, cruelty animal penalties, limitations on manners and destruction. Over on page 2, line 7, little I, it is the owner has the charge and custody of any animal and unnecessary failures to provide it with the proper food, drink, protection from weather. That's some of the new language. And then on page 2, line 12 through 14, with the amendment, find the amendment. We deleted the language on page 2, line 12 through 14, and then we went on down, and on line 15, three little I, failed to provide the animal with appropriate care in the case of immediate observation, serious illness, or injury. Roman numeral number 4 is an animal hoarder. Roman numeral 5, owners or operators of puppy mills. 23 There is created the Cruelty to Animals Protection Account Fund shall be credited account as provided by law. Funds in this account are to be continuously appropriated to the Wyoming Livestock Board to reimburse county law enforcement agents for the eligibility of expenses regarding animal cruelty cases. The Wyoming Livestock Board shall develop rules and regulations to establish eligible expenses and determine how county law enforcement agent will be reimbursed for the cost of any animal welfare case in an account not to exceed 90% in any particular case. Any reimbursement under this subsection shall be contingent upon available funds. All funds in the account may be used for and are continuously appropriated to eligible expenses authorized to make under this section. The Cruelty to Animals Protection Account shall be a permanent non-reversible account with the state auditor's office. And then P, for purpose of this section, little I, animal hoarder means a person who, A, possesses 15 or more companion animals, and there's an amendment, committee of the whole amendment to take those numbers out of this bill. And then over on page 5, line 5, page 5, line 11, we deleted it from the standard biennial budget and put it back in the exception budget so the appropriation committee can determine how much money needs to go in there. And that's the bill. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Because under the Wyoming Constitution, the Livestock Board is responsible for all things.
Question is on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100. Further discussion? All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100 has passed. Would the reading clerk please read in Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100?
Senate File 100, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 5, line 4.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100. Folks, this is a new program to reimburse counties for their costs as traditionally a county function to address certain issues. It's a brand new bill. We're talking about if this becomes effective in July, we'll be back here in 6 months. The notion is to reduce the appropriations from the $200,000 down to $50,000, watch the program. And then we also, you know, there's an overall issue with respect to whether or not these services are, how are you going to reimburse counties for their costs? And we're going to put in our joint appropriations bill right now that will come out to you. There's $35 million going to cities, towns, and counties. And you can ratchet these up. There's all counties are different. Some counties have more difficulty paying for these costs than others. But it's a slow start, and we recommend your approval of the amendment.
Discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion that Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 100 has passed. We do have a Committee of the Whole amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the Committee of the Whole amendment?
Senate File 11, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 3, lines 21 and 22.
Senator Emmerich, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100.
This amendment merely pulls the number, Mr. Chairman, sorry. This amendment merely pulls the numbers out of the bill. And I would move, yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment, if I might, and all it does is remove the actual physical numbers from the bill. There are certain individuals who are good caretakers, have a lot of animals. I have had several clients that were this way. And it just does not castigate them by the numbers. Someone has got two Labrador bitches and has two litters a year, you can imagine the number of dogs that could possibly be around the house at any one time. So I move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
We are on committee of the whole amendment number one, Senate file 100. Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, not for or against the amendment, but my question is, I believe a lot of counties and cities already have ordinances on the number of animals, especially companion animals or pets, that you can have in there. And the description, what was put to us today on this, would be probably would have to fall under a breeder's license or something like that. So I just like the sponsor's response on whether we need this or not.
Senator Emmerich. Senator Geis.
If they already have their ordinance and stuff, we're not deleting that. That's there. All we're doing is, this is kind of overall to take care of the part of this amendment of the bill that we had to take care of the large animals. Now we have to take care of the small animals. And with this amendment, then if they're taking good care of them, I mean, they can have as many as they want. But I know up in Park County, that cost them, I don't know, $15,000, $20,000 to get rid of those 134 cats. I can't remember the exact number on that one, but it can run into a lot of money.
Further. Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. President, I think that by definition, if you look over on page 4, a puppy mill requires at least animals in excess of 50. I don't think you have one puppy, you're a puppy mill. So I think I understand this is one is trying to, by definition, exempt people that have fewer than 50 from being called a puppy mill. So I think we ought to be cautious about adopting this amendment.
Further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 100 has passed. We are back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I've received emails from a number of my constituents objecting to this particular bill. Some of the objection may have been cured by the amendment that just passed, but I'm trying to figure out what's giving rise and what would cause concern. And it looks to me like that if you look at the provision at the bottom of page 4, lines 22 and 23, animals are kept in substandard condition regarding the well-being of the animals, and the facility is operated at the top of page 5 with an emphasis on profits above animal welfare. Those strike me as somewhat vague provisions where a dog breeder, and there are quite a number in my district that do it on sort of a small scale, they're somewhat at the mercy of whoever's enforcing this bill because the standards aren't as clear as they might be. And that's near as I can figure out what's causing the opposition to the bill. I'd like a response from the proponents as to how vague those standards, in fact, are.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, the standards, if you're taking care of them, nobody's complaining, you're going to be all right. But if somebody complains, then the sheriff's department will probably come out, or the local vet will come out and check it to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to. That's about the size of the bill. Most of the complaints I had was they wanted the numbers out of there So if they're taking good care of the animals and this and that, they can have as many as they want. It's just, it's when people like the one up in Park County had 134 cats, I think that's what it was. And you know darn well that wasn't a good situation.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, I have also received emails in opposition to this, concerned that who would define whether the animals were properly taken care of, or if they got into a situation with a number of barn cats, who would define that as being well taken care of in opposition to the bill?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I too have some concerns on this bill. Also, notice put out by the American Kennel Club are concerned about this bill, and I was wondering if the sponsor was aware of their objection to the bill. And I had the same question as the tall senator from Natrona County did about the word substandard and exactly what standard you're applying. And frankly, the answer kind of bothered me, because what if it's a rival breeder who is actually making the complaint against you? It's for something to be substandard, there has to be a standard there in the first place. The other question I have is at the top of page 5. The facility is operated with an emphasis upon profits above animal welfare. And, Mr. Chairman, that's a very vague standard also. I don't know that, frankly, the vast majority of businesses are started with the idea of a profit. And to what extent above animal welfare. I don't know. That's a nebulous term, and what worries me is that could be different in the eye of the beholder.
Other guys.
Mr. Chairman, if you can write a better amendment, I'd appreciate it.
Here we go. Further discussion on Senate File 100. Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also received some emails and faxes from the AKC, American Kennel Club. And I'll just give you a kind of a rundown, but what I'm leading up to is I think we can possibly, without too much difficulty, craft a few amendments that may possibly answer your questions. One is they don't like the words puppy mill. It's offensive to a legitimate breeder. I don't know about that, but I think it could be changed. Substandard conditions is not well defined, and I think we can work with that. Emphasis on profits. Just because a breeder's losing money doesn't mean they're not a puppy mill, or whatever that definition will be. I can recall years when you could define a rancher is a puppy mill. And AKC does not like the hoarding definition. And I personally don't like the term hoarder, and I don't like the term puppy mill. I think they can better defined. And with your indulgence, I believe we can craft an amendment or two that will address these questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 100, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Senate File 100 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Did somebody call for a division? Division being called for on Senate File 100. All those in favor of Senate File 100, please stand. All those opposed, including the person that asked for the division, would he please stand in humiliation?
should bring out the hearing aid relief bill. Oh.
Just to make it official, Senator Nicholas, Senate File 100 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 116.
Senate File 116, Oil and Gas Enhanced Recovery Microbial Conversion, an act relating to oil and gas, sponsored by Senator Jennings. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Rothfuss. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
There is a Standing Committee Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the Standing Committee Amendment?
Senate File 116, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole Rights Report to do so as a recommendation that Senate File 116, Oil and Gas Enhanced Recovery Microbial Conversion, do pass. I would also move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 at Senate File 116 and let Senator Jennings discuss his bill.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, with the members of the 61st indulgence, I'll give you a little bit of bug 101. Inside of, down in the coal beds, in the Powder River Basin, well, it's, and in most all coal beds, there's several groups of microbials or bugs down there. And over the centuries, these bugs have eaten the coal, and that's what created the coal bed methane that we had so much production with in the last few years. And as you look at the different ways that we can continue to get gas out of this coal bed, we have to look at new technology. Right now, what we have almost completed in the Powder River Basin is we've been removing the gas that was suspended in the water. And now we're getting to the point where there's no more gas suspended in the water, the wells are starting to decline, and we actually have thousands of wells that are scheduled for plug and abandonment. And when those wells are plugged, I doubt that we'll ever get back to the $15 gas that we had when those wells were drilled. And that's what paid for those wells. There's a little bullet point sheet on there. I won't read them all because I think you can read them. But I will tell you that right now we have two companies in the Rocky Mountains that each company has spent millions of dollars in developing their process and have tons of patents on these to go up and enhance the methane production out of the coal beds. And, Mr. Chairman, at this time I'd like to make a statement that I have rented warehouse space to one of these companies, but I don't consider that a conflict. So as we go forward and look at what's going on with one technology, is these people have figured out a way to take the coal bed and inject nutrients and feedstock. And what they do is they borrow the bugs, and the bugs quit sitting there slowly chewing away at the coal, and they come over and they get the nutrients, which makes their muscles bigger and need more food, and then they consume the feedstock, and they give you methane. This technology has been used in a pilot project in the Powder River Basin. It's been successful. It's economic, and they're ready to go commercial. What's happened is we don't have a way to permit the wells. Now, the other technology, Mr. Chairman, is a little bit different, and it is a lot different. Because in the second technology, what they do is they put nutrients in the coal bed, and as the nutrients go in there, they've figured out that there's several layers of bugs down there. The first bug eats the coal, and then what he has left over, or his byproduct, is not gas yet. So a second bug comes in, eats that byproduct, the third bug. And then finally, the last bug in this chain
eats the leftover byproduct of all of these bugs going through the chain, and that creates the methane. Now, in this technology, the coal is actually the feedstock. So the two differences is, one company, they put the nutrients and feedstock in there. Second company, they put the nutrients in there, and they have a way to help solubilize the coal so that they skip over one or two of these steps that the bugs go through. Now, if you think about it, this is the same thing that goes inside our own stomachs, our intestines. It's and some of you do make methane. Some more than others. So it's not a foreign thing to the process in nature. I mean, it's something that's there. If you read on the BP spill down in the Gulf of Mexico, a lot of that water or that oil laid on the bottom of the ocean floor, and it's gone because there were bugs, microbes in the water that went and ate the oil. Mother Nature's put these things there. They all have a job. The nice thing about what happens with both of these technologies as they go into the ground and into the coal beds is, for their economics, they want to make sure they only put enough of the, let's call the magic solution, in the ground to use. It wouldn't be to their economic favor to put more in there than what the natural bugs would eat. So you put it in there, and the bugs eat it all. It's gone. So as you look at the water and you test the water, when you put it in there, it's in such small concentrations that the people that do this will actually take a glass of this stuff that they put in the ground and drink it. So it won't hurt you. It won't hurt your cattle. And as the face that I see the majority floor leader making, I made the same face when I watched the first one drink it. And I didn't. So I didn't drink it. But they will. They'll do that. So that's how benign this is. And so it's something that we need in the Powder River Basin to continue the gas production. Now, think about what we've accomplished in the state of Wyoming with just the state's share of the gas production to date. We've built schools. We've spent that money, and there's been a lot of money that we spent. Those days are over. Nobody in any of the groups that look at the coal bed production in the Powder River Basin will argue with you that we are in the decade of completion for the Powder River Basin coal bed methane. It's over. Now, when we bring a technology like this in, we use the existing infrastructure. We use the existing wells. All these wells that are out there scheduled to be plugged and abandoned right now, these are all the candidates for this technology. So we don't have rigs running up and down the road. We don't have frack trucks and water trucks and all this kind of stuff. We take those wells and we put this technology out there and start to use it. And both of these companies have given us all kinds of numbers about what it can do for our production and just the state's revenue. Let's just talk about what we get out of it and, as legislators, what we get to go spend to make our state better. We've heard numbers anywhere from a couple of billion to 8 or 9 billion in the next 10 years. Now, I've watched the both of these companies as they've come up, and it works. It absolutely works. So it's not an experiment anymore. They're ready to go commercial, but they ran up against a roadblock. There's no way to permit them. The Oil and Gas Commission sits there and they let the one company do some pilot tests, but they said, okay, over 400 wells is enough pilot testing. Now let's figure out how to permit them. And so they went to the Oil and Gas Commission. They said, okay, let's permit them. And they go, well, let's see. They're not really this, and they're really not that. And they say, well, we don't know how to. Why don't you guys go talk to the DEQ and see if they'll permit them? So they all went over to DEQ, and they said, okay, DEQ, we want to get a permit to go out there and do this enhancement to these coal bed wells and make more gas for you and create more jobs and more money for everybody to spend. And DEQ goes, well, let's see, we could do it this way or we could do it that way, and then we'd have to go to public comment. And they really didn't have a clear-cut way to do it.
So we've got these two companies with this technology. Both technologies are fully patented, and they're looking at the Powder River Basin, which, according to both companies, is probably the best coal in the United States, definitely, maybe even in the world, to start this technology. And we have a roadblock there. So, Mr. Chairman, what we have in Senate File 116 is a way to permit these wells and allow these companies to go to work and make money. And so if you look at the bill, Mr. Chairman, one of the things that we have to identify is who's going to be the licensing agent or agency or department. The Oil and Gas Commission and their rules for just this or all of this. But one of the things that I like about putting the Oil and Gas Commission in charge of a natural gas production enhanced project is that under Class 2 permitting, they already can do it for water floods and everything. And what really I like about the Oil and Gas Commission is that they keep track of the well itself. Not only the production, not only what you're putting in to stimulate this enhanced production, but they keep track of the well condition. You have to go out and do a casing test every once in a while and put pressure, you know, set a packer so you can't push the pressure out. Pressure up that casing, make sure it doesn't leak to keep it from leaking into other zones and other aquifers. And they go out there and do safety inspections and stuff. Now, the DEQ guys, they'll go out and do safety inspections too. So what we've tried to do is, and this is the DEQ's book on just Class 5 wells. And Class 5 wells, it's really kind of interesting because it's a catch-all. You might need a Class 5 if you've got a well over here and your septic tank kind of goes in there. You'll have to have a, you know, it does Class 5 will fall into that category so that you make sure it's better when it falls off into this. So it's a catch-all. Class 2 enhancement through the Oil and Gas Commission, that's what they're used to doing. So what we've tried to do, members of the 61st, is pull these two together. Conventionally, if DEQ permits something over here, the Oil and Gas Commission's over here, and they really don't have that blend, so DEQ is not giving the Oil and Gas Commission the information that they probably need to follow the wells, and vice versa. So we're trying to pull these two together with this new avenue, how to permit this new technology. So as you look on page 2 of the bill, you'll start to see one of the things that we ran up against. The company that uses the coal as the feedstock. Well, the first thing you got to address is, what about the coal companies? Some of these wells out there are 350 feet deep. 600 feet is what the miners can go down to right now, get the overburden off, and get the coal out. So we need a way to protect the coal asset. Now, as it gets deeper than 600 feet, if a coal company owns it, it's still their coal. So right now, because of a Supreme Court decision years ago, the coal bed methane is in the oil and gas asset, but the coal itself is over here in the coal asset. So what we've tried to do is be a little creative and say that if you're going to go over here and do this enhancement on a coal owned by a coal asset, we need to bring them together in a unit. And that way it protects the owner of the coal so that not all of the all the money goes off of this project just to the oil and gas interests, but also that the coal interests are covered too. And, Mr. Chairman, as we go through this, I'd like to stick in the amendment. And so on line 16 was the first place that when we brought all the coal guys in there, we got to talking, and they would like this stuck in the language. So page 2, line 6, after the G, we would like to insert, the application shall demonstrate that the applicant has a legally binding commitment to plug and abandon all wells not later than 60 days prior to their intersection with an active surface or conventional underground coal mine. Now, so not only are we trying to protect the coal asset, bringing it into a unit, but if you've got a coal mine working here, and you've got a whole bunch of these wells drilled out in front of it. As that mine approaches, prior to getting the permit from the Oil and Gas Commission, you have to show that you have an agreement in place with the coal asset owners that when you're out here coming on there, that you'll come in and plug those wells and abandon them. Because at that point, the coal mine is going to mine that coal, and it's their coal, and they should have it. So we stick that phrase in there, and the coal guys were happy with that. And we pulled that in committee. We had already spent a lot of time. We tried to bring all the stakeholders into this bill so they would agree. So that was one of the areas that we had to bring them in. Now, as we go through onto page 3, we addressed the two different ways that you can permit a well. And basically what we've tried to accomplish here is the technology that uses the coal as the feedstock, they should be permitted a little bit different than the guys that put the nutrients in the feedstock in there. So we're thinking that they will probably need to permit under the Class 2 permit agreements, and that they would, because this would fall under the enhancement side of the industry, the Oil and Gas Commission would look at it. They'd say, okay, you're doing an enhancement. It'd be a lot like a water footer, that type of operation. But one of the things that we wanted to be real careful of on this was that a lot of these coal aquifers are drinking water quality, and we don't want to mess that up. So we made sure that we included in there that a Class 2 well permit demonstrating that the groundwater will not be degraded and will be in compliance with the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. Now, again, remember I told you, these guys will take what they pump down there and drink it themselves. I won't, but they will. So we don't want them to be able to go in and put this stuff in the ground and ruin an aquifer. Now, there's a lot of coal bed zones up there that's not drinking water. But we still are going to hold them to task and make sure that they don't degrade, because of the degrade part in here, they don't degrade that aquifer, even though it's not drinking water quality, that they leave it as is. And these guys with both of these technologies don't have any problem with that. Because, again, if they put more of this solution in the ground than is needed, and the bugs don't eat it all, then they're wasting their own money. Now, the other approach that we had to take was the Class 5 well, and the other company that puts the feedstock in and the nutrients in, that better fits them, because you're putting it down there, you're bringing the bugs over, borrowing them, and under the Class 5 catch-all, they really kind of fit in there better. But, as you notice, it says, upon filing an application under this section, the commission shall promptly set the matter. So what they have to do in this case is they have to go to DEQ, and they have to get the permit for the Class 5, come back to the commission, Oil and Gas Commission, and apply for their permit. And this is where we're trying to blend the two agencies a little bit, and both agencies didn't have any problem with this, that they could cooperate like this. And now we can watch the wells as the Oil and Gas Commission does, and the integrity of the well bore and all that kind of stuff, and then insert the rules from DEQ in there. So we've really worked hard to try to bring both of these together. Now, Mr. Chairman, as we sat in the committee, and we got to look at, we brought in the petroleum guys and the gas guys, and they had a problem in the existing bill, and that was that we tried to redefine or more define coal bed methane. Well, what we came to the realization of is gas is gas. And as they put it, whether it burns with a blue flame or a green flame or a yellow flame, it's still natural gas. So under the definitions where we had put an additional definition of gas, we agreed that needed to come out. And, Mr. Chairman, that's in the Standing Committee Amendment that starts on line 4 with, page 4, line 11, where we deleted the reference to Wyoming Statute 35-101 and thereon, and then below that on line 14, we took out that, and it goes over to page 5, we took out that definition. It wasn't needed. There's been plenty of other places where it's been defined. This is in the oil and gas statute, so it's defined as gas. We didn't need that. And so in that amendment, we also on page or line 12, page 4, we struck R and made it is. And then for the same reason on page 1 under where it says amending a definition, we struck that too because we're not amending the definition anymore. As we went on through the bill, Mr. Chairman, on page 5, we also saw a little bit of language correction there. On line 13, we noticed that because of that change that we took that definition out of, that we needed to say to issue orders pursuant to Wyoming Statute 35110, allowing the unitization of the oil and gas interest with consenting, instead of those coals, we changed that to consenting coal interests that are actually consumed as a direct result of the well and reservoir injections to restore or enhance the microbial conversion of hydrocarbon substrates to methane gas. So this is covering the company that actually uses the coal for the feedstock. So, Mr. Chairman, what we have here now is we have an opportunity to go out and bring in a new technology and look at all the things, Mr. Chairman, that it does that have always been a complaint of the coal bed methane. One of the biggest complaints up there is that we took the water out of the formation and threw it away. Evaporated it, ran it down the stream, whatever. That, and one of our most beloved assets of the state water was flowing down the creek to some other state. This technology, both companies need the water. They need the water in the formation to make this technology work. So right there is the solution to the water problem that we've battled with coal bed methane from day one. Mr. Chairman, I submit to you that this is exciting technology. It's the technology that we need to keep the Powder River Basin revenues coming in. It doesn't have a great impact because we're using existing infrastructure, but we do have an importance on it, Mr. Chairman, because if we can't figure out how to get these companies working, they're going to take their technologies and their patents, and they're going to go find someplace they can. At that point, somebody said, well, you know, will somebody else will come in and do it? No, they won't. Because between these two companies, they have the patents that pretty much ties up both sides of this technology. Someday, somewhere down the road, somebody might come up with a new idea that will be outside those patents. But it's kind of, we kind of need to look at it. They've put millions of their own dollars in this research. They're ready to go. I think it's our responsibility to open the door and let them try it. We think we have every safeguard that we can put in there. We're going to monitor them. We're going to watch them. If they start to degrade an aquifer, we're going to pull their permit. Mr. Chairman, I hope everybody votes for it, and I stand for questions. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I have the standing committee amendment explained. We'll go on that first, and then I hope you vote for it.
Questions on standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 116. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 116, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We do have a Committee of the Whole amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in Committee of the Whole?
Senate File 116, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 3.
Barring any objection, I'm going to pull Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 116. We are back on the bill. Discussion on Senate File 116. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question on the basic chemistry of what's going on here. We're getting out methane, and we've got carbon and water to start. So I presume your basic chemistry is that you take, for every carbon, you take two water molecules. The bugs strip the hydrogen off, and that gives you CH4, which is methane. And then you have an oxygen molecule, and you need some energy to drive this. So I presume then at some point that oxygen gets converted to CO2 to provide the energy to drive this thing. And my question is, what happens to the CO2? So two questions. Am I right on the basic chemistry? What happens to the CO2, and if it is contained in the formation, do we have a very neat way of gasifying our coal so that it can be burned in a much more economical and less polluting way?
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To my colleague from Natrona County, you're a lot more of a chemist than I am. But you basically have the idea. But one of the neat things about the technology, and that right now one of the companies has an ex situ project going on with the energy school. And so it does show that as you put the coal in and you put the bugs in and the nutrients, that the first thing that comes off of it's CO2. But what they do is they take that CO2 and they put it right back into the next vessel on the exit chute, and they've got bugs that convert it. So we're not going to end up with a formation full of CO2. We're actually using, because of the other bugs that are out there, we can actually convert it. And I know this, and I can tell by the look on my colleague from Natrona County, but yes, it is. It's leading technology. They're doing it now, and it's not something that's going to fill the reservoir with CO2. They'll utilize it.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, where then does the energy to fuel the bugs come from? Because they've got to get energy from somewhere. I've assumed they produce the CO2, and if you get rid of the CO2, there's something missing, so we don't have a perpetual motion machine.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The nutrients that the bugs eat is what creates the driver or the energy for the bugs. The bugs are the machine that move it. So what's happened is a lot of these bugs have eaten the coal over the centuries or millions of years or whatever doctrine that you use for how old we are. And if you put they start to lay dormant as they use these other nutrients. So part of this process is you have to put the nutrients in there to get the bugs working. The bugs are your machine with the nutrients that have the energy to make the process work. And, Mr. Chairman, if we go any further than that, you're going to have to go sign the confidentiality agreement with both companies and let them show you firsthand how it works.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think it would be beneficial actually to follow up with the good senator from Natrona County tomorrow and provide him a little bit more detail about the energetics of the reactions and what the product reactants are, because my good colleague is correct that as described, it's probably a perpetual motion machine and we may have some conservation of energy problems, but I'm fairly confident that the process in fact does work, although I can't tell you what the exact reactants are at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to report that one of these projects, pilot projects with on my ranch, unless there are objections, I don't intend to declare a conflict. There's thousands of CDM wells that are eligible in the Powder River Basin, and unfortunately, I just have a very few of them. On this project... On this project, the one company had a public meeting in Gillette, I can't remember what, the last summer or a year before, and they disclosed all of the nutrients that goes into this project. and they're all approved, and I think the information they put out, they was all in food stuff or something that we consume. Of course, what they didn't give us was the actual formula, because that's their formula that is a trademark, whatever you call it, patent for their information. They done this, and apparently, it's my understanding that in the past, the Oil and Gas Commission felt like they had the authority to allow this. After I know of two projects besides the one on my ranch that they did. They started this one on my ranch, and then within the past year, it was stopped when the Oil and Gas Commission decided they didn't have the authority to grant this. What they told me and the information that I have seen, their idea was to put this nutrients in, and they said don't expect a big increase. Your production, the goal, and the one they had south of Gillette, which is 40 miles from my ranch, and the other one was up around Decker, Montana. And they showed charts where they was able to stabilize the production rather than the continued downcline. It looked like to me that if that was their goal and what they can do, it would certainly benefit not only the royalties owners, but the state of Wyoming that received the products and the taxes from it for the long term. The water that what they explained to me was why they was trying to do it on my ranch in that area was an area that was still producing water. And what they did, they took all the water then and would pump it back into the ground with the nutrient. The disadvantage to me, I had to go out and get my windmills and my wells working again because I didn't have all this water being discharged for my livestock. But in the long term, it appeared to me that it was a great benefit, not only for the royalty owners, but then again for anybody that benefits from our taxes. And there's naturally concerns them all. My water well for the house is right alongside one of these wells. They said, I asked them, and they agreed that they wouldn't put the nutrient in right alongside of it. We're in the same depth in that area. It's 900 feet. My well is 1,500 feet, and it perforated from 900 to the 1,500 feet. And they went ahead on the other areas and put it in. They put out a little square box about the size of two or three of our desks put together and about 6 feet tall. That's what they put the nutrients in. They haul it out, and then the water is combined and pumped back in. It appears to me that it's a project that's worth continuing and being able to get more information and see if, like I told them, I hope they were right, that they could level off the production and then not abandon the wells. Thank you.
Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 116, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Senate File 116 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I've been watching you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
The motion is that the Committee of the Whole rise and report. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the committee the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate Joint Resolution 5, do pass amended. Senate File 9, do pass amended. Senate File 22, do pass amended. Senate File 33, do pass. Senate File 37, do pass amended. Senate File 68, do pass amended. Senate File 88, do pass amended. Senate File 100, do pass amended. And Senate File 116, do pass amended. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I move for adoption to the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. That motion is carried. That report has been adopted. Reports from standing committees.
January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 90, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins, Senator Hines, Chairman. January the 25th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 93, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, and Perkins. No, Senators Case and Hines. Senator Hines, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, January 26th.
Are there any announcements? Senator Scott?
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet in the normal committee room at 7:30 a.m. Committee members, note the time. Senate File 125, Healthcare Facilities Crisis Management. Senate File 118, Career and Technical Training Grants. And then we will reconvene down in room 302 at 9 o'clock to talk about meningococcal vaccination. And the reason for going to 302 is that enables us to talk with the high school class that developed or helped develop the idea for that particular bill. Senator Geis?
Public Land and Water Resources will meet in about 10 minutes. We've got to talk about more water. It'll be Senate File 122, Water Rights Federal Lands. Senate File 126, Water Beneficial Use.
Senator Coe?
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock over in S11 by the Smoking Lounge to take up Senate File 70, Accountability, and Senate File 52, Teacher Tenure. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Senator Perkins?
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, well, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S1, we'll take up consideration or consider the following bills. Senate File 89, Adult Protective Services. Senate File 30, Wyoming Safe Homes Act. And Senate File 123, Katie's Law.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Senate Appropriations Committee number 2 will meet upstairs after adjournment to consider the... To consider school finance local resources at Senate File 106. We will then meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to consider the following bills or files. Senate File 2, State Treasury Reports. Senate File 48, Wildlife and Natural Resources Trust Account Board. Senate File 62, Large Project Funding. Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills. Senate File 91, Wildlife, Livestock Disease Research Partnering Funding, and we may shuffle some of these as we're going through to accommodate members of the Senate. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
President, committee number Wednesday, January 26th, 10 minutes after adjournment, up in room S14. to take up Senate File 124, Overweight and Oversized Vehicle Penalties, and Senate File 131, Military Department Federally Funded Positions.
Senator Bebout. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, January 26, 15 minutes after the noon recess in room S18 to have the continuation of Senate File 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen Revisions 2, Senate File 105, State Control of Certain Land, and if time allows, Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may have,
sir. Mr. President, I'll be in the Revenue Committee at 1 p.m. tomorrow to discuss the Gillette Madison Water Project with anyone that would like to learn more about it. I'm doing this because some of you have listened to me for 2 or 3 years talk on this subject, and I thought perhaps those that have questions or haven't heard it would like to have an informal get-together and talk about the project. I have maps and quite a bit of information, and I'm anticipating maybe some of you just soon not hear it all again.
Go ahead, Senator Hines.
Pardon?
I heard a question back here, but I'm not sure. Go ahead, Senator Driscoll, I guess. I thought maybe it was directed at Senator Hines.
What time
did
I miss? Very short.
Approximately 1 p.m. tomorrow, noon.
Okay. Other announcements?
I think you should check.
Senators, it kind of brings to mind that even though we're really not to the cutoff date yet, you see the blue bills in the clerk's box here are House bills. I'm beginning to kind of, in my mind, pre-assign these to committees. And so when these are ready, when we've appropriately dealt with the Senate files, I'll start reading some of these in. If your committee feels running low on bills, and I have a list, and I'm looking at several committees now, if you want to talk to me, I'll start feeding these House bills into the system to start filling the pipeline. Now, none of these House bills will probably come up on general file until such time as we've dealt with the Senate files, but we can get these things started in committee, and we can keep this engine running. So if you feel like you're ready to start some of this, I've got a list. I know what the bills are. I've got them pre-assigned, and we'll get that going. So you can talk to me. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may.
Members of the Senate, remember that tomorrow at noon is cutoff for bills. It's all Senate files. So if you've got something, you better get it in. See ya.
Okay, other announcement. Seems to me that we're running pretty well. I think you're to be complimented. Never have I seen the depth and the breadth and the civility of the debate. I think you're to be really complimented in regard to the quality of the debate. So with that, no other announcements. The Senate shall stand adjourned until you have heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Senate shall stand. That motion passes. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. January 26 tomorrow.